Well, it's summertime. What, no cheer? Yay, it's summertime. I don't know what your favorite season is, but summertime is here. So over the summertime, I was thinking about what we would talk about, inspiration, so we look at in the Bible, and I thought we'd talk about zingers of the Bible. And if you're anything like me and you've read through the Bible, you've come across zingers every once in a while. What are zingers? Well, the dictionary definition for zingers is an outstanding person or thing, like a zinger of a shot. You're on the golf course and you hit the best ball you've ever hit. That's a zinger. Another definition is a striking or amusing remark, to open the speech with a zinger. But as I thought about those two definitions, I realized that in my usage of the English language, it's somewhat of a mix of the two. In fact, my teenage sons, have their own definition, I think, of zinger. And a zinger for me is a mixture of those two. What's a zinger? Well, my definition is a zinger is a striking remark or a statement, a proposition, you might say, to which there's really no answer, just a response. You know, you've been in a room with a group of people, it's a party, and you're talking about fishing. And one guy says, I caught a 21-pound trout. Another guy says, wow, I caught a 40-pound salmon. It's beautiful. And then some guy comes out and says, well, when I was deep sea fishing, I caught a tuna that was 3,000 pounds. That's the zinger, because most men around say, well, okay, fine. You got the biggest fish award. How big was it? A zinger. And if you're anything like me, you'll be reading in the Bible, and all of a sudden you come to a zinger. A zinger is something that stops you, and you say, whoa. I am so overwhelmed with what I just read, or I really have problems with what I just read, or how do I possibly understand what I just read? Those are zingers. And for God to be God, he's going to zing us every once in a while, because he's amazing. And there'll be things that just go right above us, and we reach up to grasp because it's so incredible. But they're zingers. So I thought over the summertime we'd talk about zingers. If you want to use your bulletins, you can certainly respond to me as you'd like about the zingers that we'd take a look at. You can call me or text me with the zinger that you have in the Bible where you think, wow, that's good. Now, please don't say a zinger is the book of Isaiah. You won't let me do the book of Isaiah on a Sunday morning. All, you know, 56 chapters or whatever, 63 chapters. So zingers, I would say, are one or two sentences. Because God, at least as I've understood God, he's a person of few words. He doesn't have to say very much to zing us, to really amaze us. So if you want to send in to me a zinger that you found, I promise that I'll consider it in terms of looking at it in the Bible. I am a human male, so if there's something about women, I'll be careful about, you know, looking at that text, and maybe I'll ask one of the women of the congregation to come up and help me with the understanding of that zinger. But the zinger that we're going to look at today, the zinger that we're going to consider is so profound that it impacts or speaks about our past and gives us huge implications for our future. Entire disciplines, careers have been made out of this zinger, out of its affirmation or its rejection. This biblical zinger has really no answer. In other words, well, I say back to God this, which actually God allows you. Instead, just response, right? Responding to God, not really answering. So I want you to imagine this. For this zinger today, you have to imagine a virtual compass that's right about here. And it's the entire room. And it's in like a greenish-blue kind of definition. You know, like those virtual lights that you see, the keyboards. It's a compass that's sitting in this room. And true north is pointing to north, and there's, of course, west and east and south. It's a virtual compass. And you're on that compass somewhere. True north is the statement we're going to talk about, because that's the zinger. True north is this statement. And all of us, even though we may move degrees from time to time, we are on that spectrum, that what I would call a circular human understanding spectrum. Okay? Do you understand what I'm... Do you get that? It's a virtual compass. True north is the statement. And we're somewhere around that circle in terms of responding to it. We'll talk about it a little bit more. But oddly enough, regardless of where you are on the compass, east, west, any degrees kind of around it, the truth of the true north, the statement that we're going to talk about, doesn't have the conflict that you often perhaps hear with other perspectives. In other words, if you're northwest, that's okay. There is an area you don't want to be, but we'll talk about that. If you're like northeast, that's okay. If you find that you are at northeast and someone else is at southwest, please don't have a fight with them in the parking lot. It's not worth it. The underlying truth of the zinger is so profound that something far deeper than what we hear in society is going on. And we'll get to it. Are you ready? Do you want to reorient yourself along the spectrum somewhere? Oh, no, that's good. Let's not do that. The zinger of the Bible is found, if you have your Bibles with you, in Genesis 1. And Genesis 1 says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. It's the first part of the zinger. It's the most powerful part of the zinger. Now you say, oh, that's fairly common words. Well, hold on. Over the last 3,000 years, great minds interacting together have championed various trajectories all around the compass. Great minds like Aristotle and Ptolemy and Nicholas Copernicus and Isaac Newton and Galileo Galilei, Jonas Kepler, George Demetri, I'm not sure if I pronounce his name right, Charles Darwin, Albert Einstein, Stephen Hawking, of which all of those men, although there's women, of course, that have contributed to this, all of those men intellectually are just second floor compared to me. They get things that I can't even comprehend. They're brilliant. But they're on the spectrum. And each of these men have interacted with this statement, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Some of you know how the different responses have been, but let me just mention a few. Galileo said that championed heliocentrism, which says all the planets circle around the sun. I don't have a problem with that. It's true. Darwin, in his Origin of the Species, spoke about molecular and biological evolution. The spectrum of that is wide, and we may conflict at times, but do things change over time? Well, look at my hair. Yes, there's change, if that's what you can take out of evolution. There's change that happens. There's truth there, although we'll take a look at it a little deeper. Einstein contributed the theory of relativity and the expanding universe, which is fascinating. We'll get into that as well. Hawking, Stephen Hawking, still alive, brilliant man, interplanetary evolution. Aristotle, Gould, Hoyle brought into our understanding the steady state theory, which we'll talk about. And the Belgian Catholic priest, George Demetri. Does anyone know how to pronounce his last name right? George Demetri. He was the first one to say the Big Bang Theory happened. Belgian Catholic priest, George Demetri. Anthropologists and archaeologists have also contributed, and they've tracked origins of Indian and Babylonian and Greek and Hebrew creation stories. Okay, so you start to see people on the spectrum, where they are on the grid, where they are on the compass points, they're all around. And they do interact with this incredible statement, the first three words, which are already mind-blowing, in the beginning. In the beginning. It's already controversial at this point. But the compass really gives an indication that every single human being has a human-centric understanding of what these words mean. In other words, we are viewing it from after the event by definition. trying to understand what it was in the beginning. So, it's already a zinger. And some people who proposed the steady state theory said that the universe is ungenerated. The universe is indestructible. It always was, and it always will be. In other words, there's no beginning. Up until about 1930, that was a scientific theory that was believed in, steady state. It's always been. Eternal universe. And then people came along like Einstein and said, you know, it's actually expanding outwards, and we can, through a lot of physics and math, determine that it actually had a beginning. So, with this perspective, in the beginning is then followed with this next part of the zinger, God created the heavens and the earth. The first two words, which are already mind-blowing zingers. God created. Some of you have sat in university classes, as I have as well, in which they've said, this is a lie. This is a man-made truth. This is not real truth. In fact, some of the people that respond to that, first of all, say, the first word's a lie. There is no God. That's atheism. We could call that due south. If due north is God created the heavens and the earth in the beginning, due south is there is no God. There never was a beginning, and God didn't create. Make sense? Nodding means yes. Okay, so due south is there is no God, and the origins are inevitably due to gravity. The universe did create itself from nothing. There was spontaneous creation. There was molecular evolution. And in other words, the universe created itself. Let's also due south compared to this truth that we're looking at, the zinger we're looking at. But our zinger that we're looking at here, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, has two truths that are tracked all throughout the Bible. You can track these in Psalms and Job and Isaiah and the Gospels and the letters. Consistent truth of these two things. And these two things are the triune God, Father, Son, and Spirit, were alone in pre-creation. In other words, to God the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, there was no beginning. There was no in the beginning for them. They pre-existed. It's one truth from the Bible. There was no beginning for God. The triune God were alone in pre-creation. Second truth, God is the creative actor, the prime mover of everything, is what this claims. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. In other words, that's Hebrew for everything, all matter, everything you know. God created. Well, then the head scratching starts with the scientists because they say, okay, then how? Well, we're assisted here with what follows. So we have this next part of it, now, verse 2. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. Also, mind-blowing comprehension of what was. Earth was formless and empty. I only know the earth to be formed and full. I can't understand the earth formless and empty. Formless? Darkness was over the surface of the deep. Where, tell me please, is the surface of the deep? Is that at the bluffs? Where's the surface of the deep? Especially with what follows. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. With this, scientists all throughout time have begun to speculate about what was happening. And on the details that is done mathematically or through physics, the universe is a billion years old. Sorry, the universe is 20 billion years old, is what some of the details are, they say. It had a beginning, is the contemporary understanding of science. That life evolved is the contemporary understanding of science. That it, the evidence of the earth evolving is found in rock strata. And it will have an end. These are debates among scientists who are brilliant men and women. But presently, we have a problem. The commentary I was reading this week, James Montgomery Boyce spends 72 pages on the first three verses. Digs into it. This is one of the things that he says that I think is brilliant. Robert Jastrow, who's the director of the NASA's Goddard Institute, preeminent scientist, wrote Red Giants and White Dwarfs, Until the Sun Dies, and God and the Astronomers. This is what he says. There is a kind of religion in science. It is the religion of a person who believes there is order and harmony in the universe. Every event can be explained in a rational way as the product of some previous event, religion of science. This religious faith of the scientist is violated by the discovery that the world had a beginning. Under conditions in which the known laws of physics are not valid. And it came about as a byproduct of forces or circumstances we can't discover. This is a scientist, head of NASA's Goddard Institute, that says this. He continues and says, at this moment in science, it seems as though science will never be able to raise the curtain on the mystery of creation. For the scientist who has lived by his or her faith and the power of reason, the story ends like a bad dream. He has scaled the mountains of ignorance. He is about to conquer the highest peaks. As he pulls himself over the final rock, he is greeted by a band of theologians who have been sitting there for centuries. He continues on in his explanation here, James Montgomery does, saying it's not that theologians are brilliant. It's that they've been given something, and that's the word of God that says, in the beginning, God created. And he did it in this way. Now, I want to pause there just for a moment, because I even find difficulty myself in terms of understanding where I am on the spectrum in using the word he. Because when you look at this text, my understandings and usages of the male pronoun seem to limit God a whole lot. And we'll get to that in a few verses. But I will use the word he in part because God presents himself as a loving father. Read your Bible. I'm not sure why he does that. I don't know. But as the verses continue, there is something happening because the he that God is using is a lot more androgynous as a he than I would use it as a he. In other words, God did not have a tie on when he was creating. And I realize I'm on the spectrum. You may debate that point, but that's just one of my challenges. In this zinger, though, God gives clarity to what's going on here because it says, and God said, let there be light. And there was light. And then it continues on and says, and God saw the light was good. This is a formula or a poetic presentation in Hebrew of three things. God spoke, it was so, it was good. He spoke, it was so, it was good. It occurs seven times. The first time he says, let there be light. Now this is incredible because the easiest, the simplest act of will is to speak. All of us that have had young children know this. We want to be able to say, clean up your room and see it done. We don't want to say, clean up your room, I'll help you, I'll get it done for you, you watch, and then you can do it when you're 17. We want to say, Andrew, and him kind of somehow know, it's about your room, clean it up. The simplest act, the most powerful act of God is he speaks and it's so. He doesn't have to get his hands dirty making this stuff. God speaks and it's so. But what follows, God speaks, it's so, and it's good, gives us a little bit of clarity as well. we see poetically, if you have your Bibles continuing on, I'll just mention this for you, this dynamic. God separates the water, creates solid, liquid, and vapor form, ice, sea, and sky. He separates the water from the land. It was so, it was good. God said, let the land produce vegetation. It was so, it was good. Let there be lights in the sky to give light on earth, day and night. It was so, it was good. Let water and the sky teem with living creatures. It was so, it was good. Let the land produce living creatures. It was so, and it was good. And on the sixth day, and this gives us a real insight into the zinger. On the sixth day, God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, to rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, the livestock, the wild animals on the ground. God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree with fruit for your own consumption and for the consumption of the animals. And it was so, and it was very good. How do we make sense of this zinger? When I was in York University, I was part of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. And one day we had heard on campus that there was going to be a creation evolution debate. I thought, oh, this is going to be good. Let's go to it. It was like 30 of us that went to this creation evolution debate. Packed room. Two physicists that sat up at the front. And the physicist, as the first physicist that was sitting there, he said, even though it's not true and it didn't happen, if I did believe in creation, this is what I would defend it. Well, he already broke it. Because basically he said, the other side's right, it's the end of the debate, but let's play around for another hour and a half. That's not right. That's arrogance in science. You need to know that because you need to know truth in your world. You need to know this dynamic of the fact that we're all working it out together. There may be some people that have been endowed with brilliance in some ways, but you have the right to make up your own decision about along that spectrum how we interact with this in the beginning, because there's implications that we'll talk about here in a moment. Depending upon your perspective, how you deal with this text, what you think of this text, and its furthest extreme, the South Pole, the south direction, it will define where you came from, why you're here, and thus determine where you're going and what your purpose is. If you say, there is no God, there is no purpose, nothing was created, it's all happenstance, where do you derive hope from? If you say, there is no God, there is no purpose, we're all random acts of molecular muck, where's morality? What's your plans for tomorrow? Isn't it just going to happen the way it's going to happen? It doesn't really matter? Doesn't only the strong survive, and eventually if you're not the strongest, you're not going to survive? There's implications to what we believe in these intense truths. Now, some of you may be saying, man, this is kind of strange coming to church and reading Genesis 1. But it's more relevant than you think. On June 13th of this year, National Post ran an interesting article. You can come up and take a look at it if you want. It's called Earth's Bad Day. A collision 4.5 billion years ago nearly destroyed our planet, but instead helped start the path to life. Interesting article. And this is just a summary of what it said. Creation stories tend to be outlandish, in keeping with the near impossibility of explaining why the world is the way it is. Which I would argue the creation story is not intended to tell us all the different dynamics about why the world's the way it is. Why do zebras have stripes? It doesn't say it in these verses. I think God wanted us to work it out, figure it out. Anyways, creation stories tend to be outlandish in keeping with the near impossibility of explaining why the world is the way it is. But fanciful as they are, creation stories, however, these myths have nothing on modern science, whose creation stories, which already involves a mysterious Big Bang, this week got even weirder, says Joseph Breen. At a geophysics conference in California, a series of discoveries was announced that show in unprecedented detail the Earth as we know it today was born from a violent collision between two ancient planets. The cataclysmic meeting of the proto-Earth and the smaller Mars-sized planet, get this, that's named Theia, which is the Greek name for goddess, set the Earth spinning faster than ever, tilted its axis by 23 degrees, and created the moon from the debris. That's what happened 4.5 billion years ago. I didn't know whether you knew that. A leading Earth and planetary sciences professor at Harvard said an analysis of material from the deep within the Earth says this is how it was put together. I don't know why you use those words. This is how the world was put together. Isn't that purpose statement? This Genesis moment for the blue planet and its signature single moon can be dated quite accurately to 4.5 billion years ago. Is it relevant for us today? Why is it relevant for us today? It's because there's purpose in where we came from. There's meaning in how we understand who we are. And that's what we get out of it. Regardless of all the theories, it's really not about the details. If you want to debate with me afterwards of how old the Earth is, it'll be fun, but it's not really all that essential. I'll tell you why in a moment. But I wanted to share with you three no's and three yeses. First, no. No human being was ever remotely close to this event in any cosmology. According to the Bible, the birds and the animals, all the animals were created before us. If anyone has the right to debate about cosmology, chronologically, you think it would be the first to be created. So maybe it's fish. It's like me, I was thinking about this yesterday, it's like me standing on the bluffs. The description, the analysis, the details. It's like me standing on the bluffs looking over to that tower that's on the south side in New York. And telling you, well, I know the chemical composition of what's coming out of that tower. I know what its impact is. Well, am I not a far distance away from the right to be able to say what it factually is? So I think the details are irrelevant. The implications are life-changing. Second, no. No humans have the capability to fully grasp the beginning. Let me do a little bit of a test here, just to put it into perspective. I don't know how many of you have gotten to know Siri. Siri's an interesting person. Siri's on your iDevice if you have one. But Siri can tell you interesting things about the world, so I just wanted to ask Siri how she came into existence, if you don't mind. Siri, who made you?
I, Siri, was designed by Apple in California.
Siri, why were you made? Siri, why were you made?
I don't know what you mean by Siri, why were you made? How about a web search for it?
Let's look at the internet to find out why she was created. That's got to give us some good, solid answers. Siri, how were you created?
I don't know what you mean by, were you created? How about a web search for it?
She wants to go back to the web search. Sorry, one more. Matthew just texted me. Siri, why was I created?
Okay, I found this.
Why are we here? To explore the computational universe on the web. Siri, how was I made?
Okay, check it out.
iodine plus lithium, iodine plus potassium plus, she's telling me how it was made. My point is this. This is the creation. The creation isn't endowed with the full understanding of how it was created. That exists in the mind of the Creator. How can any scientist say, hey God, I have a theory about how I was made, without saying, is this not right? I think it's just a natural question. Any scientist should say, God, I don't believe in you. Can you tell me whether I'm right? Because we weren't there in the beginning. We don't have the capacity, because we are the creation, to grasp the full effect of us, our creation itself. So let me say my last no. No, there's no return to it. You're never going back to the beginning. That's the way time works. It's not circular. You'll never go back to see how it happened again. You will not see the beginning again. You'll just meet the prime mover. Does that make sense? In other words, I'm happy to go talk with scientists about how things are made, and it might be interesting, but I'm never going to live those days again. I'm here already. I don't have to think about how I got here, except for the fact of what the implications are for my future. So let me share with you three yeses. Yes, there is a God. The Bible tells us that everyone, every human being, will know that without question. Isaiah 45, Romans 14, Philippians 2, as surely as I live, said God, every knee will bow before me. Every tongue will acknowledge me. Everyone will say true north is true north, because you've said it, God. Read the last part of the book of Job, God's response to Job. It's brilliant, because in effect, God says, I made you for a purpose. I love you, but I'm not going to tell you how a Leviathan was made. I'm not going to tell you where the snow goes in the summer, because you can't understand that. Second, yes. Yes, God has a purpose and a desire and a meaning and a values for his creation. That's the brilliance of these texts. God actually has a purpose and a desire for his creation. What is that? Yes, it's about faith and goodness. Quite simply, you've been made in God's image. You can speculate, you can ask questions. That's the truth, is the fact that everything that we've created all around us has come from the fact that we have creative abilities like God has. And our minds to ask questions are brilliant examples of God's creative power. It's just when we start to tell God who he is not, how he did things, it's got to be a little bothersome for him. It's about goodness. Living as a human being, contributing goodness to your world in response to your Creator. The truth is, you've been made for goodness. Whole creation has been made for goodness. And I really don't need to go on very long about what goodness is, because all of you know it. God has imbued you with a conscience, so you know what goodness is. And you feel it throughout the days that you live. Go and live for goodness. I think that's what this text is about.